Well, good morning, Jacob, as well. My name is Andy. I've been here a time or two. In some ways, I kind of feel like an honorary member of the community and also maybe an honorary member of the staff. Have you figured out what this is yet, by the way? Has anyone been figuring out what's going on up here? You thought that a few weeks ago Greg was going to start the ice ball on fire, or you maybe were hoping he was going to, like I was when I was here. You've seen Advent wreaths before. Four of them, fourth week of Advent. I don't know about you, it's been a challenging week for me. It was a challenging week before Friday. If you read my bio, you know where I work, and if you read the newspaper, you know that there's been some challenging things at Luther Seminary where I work. But in life, and especially in faith, I think sometimes we kind of feel like this is about all we have at most, is we're in a really, really dark, pitch-black world, and we have a little headlamp, and it shows a couple feet in front of us, and we kind of move forward in faith, hoping that the ground is still level and solid in front of us. So I think this is an appropriate candle, or whatever you want to call it, for our wreath this week. I've been looking forward to being here during Advent, during Christmas, being that this is my favorite time of the year. But I would be lying if I said that it was easy to prepare for this, even when I thought that I had something kind of worth sharing. Things happen on Friday, and as you can imagine it in your own life, as it has as well, it changes everything. Things like that happen, and we are left asking the questions of how and why, and the things that made sense to us the day before no longer do. And so as we go into the Christmas season that so many of us do love and look forward to, our hearts are heavy. And the same peace and joy that kind of seem to be the themes of this season maybe aren't called into question in their reality, but they are more difficult to experience. And so I come here telling you that I do love Christmas, and it's for a lot of different reasons. And the main reason that I think I love Christmas is because it makes me feel like a kid again. All the memories, all the sights and sounds and smells and tastes that happen only in this time of the year. I mean, you know it. It's happening in your home because you're putting up decorations that are only up for like 4 to 6 weeks every year. And you're listening to music that you, unless you're like me, you probably don't listen to it in June and July. And there's desserts that you make and meals that you're going to eat and all sorts of other things. Sweaters that you're going to wear that you would never wear at another time of the year. But we wear them during this time of year, and all of it, including the memories that come back that are connected with all these things, and maybe the pictures that your mom continues to put up of you when you were about 4 years old, they remind us of being a child. But even amidst those memories, and maybe what usually seems like a good thing, because remembering your childhood brings back a certain innocence, since Friday, the innocence of childhood has been challenged. And we're left wondering, is there any innocence left? And so we talk about Christmas and Advent and adventure and all these other things with that recognition as well. So thanks to Greg and Jacob's Well for being a place where we can recognize that. I mentioned earlier that the memories of Christmas that come back right now, my earliest Christmas memory, I wasn't even 2 years old. And it was at a time in my life where my parents were separated, which, to be honest, is not something that as a family we ever talk about. And in a lot of ways, it's something that I just ignore. You'd think it didn't happen. And so at this Christmas, I can remember that my sister and I were living with my mom, and my dad was living in our house. And on Christmas Eve, we moved back in. We celebrated Christmas together, and we became a family again. And it's a beautiful story, right? It's a beautiful memory of family and of Christmas. And for a long time, that was the story that when people got to know me and they understood how much I loved Christmas, and they asked why, I would tell them that story. Because to me, it's my earliest memory of anything. And here it is with my family and with Christmas and all these other things that I love. But recently, I had a painful realization, a recognition. I was looking through a photo album, an old photo album from the family that I borrowed from my mom. This is literally just a few weeks ago. And I came across some photos of that apartment. And I know that my mom writes on the back of every photograph she's ever taken. And so I pulled it out and I looked on the back and it said in her handwriting, March 1983. Well, that was right after that Christmas. And I knew that March is after December because I'm smart enough to figure that out. And I knew that that was after I had thought that we had moved back in. And I think I'd always had a little bit of a question of whether or not it really happened the way I remembered it. But, I mean, this was a really special memory to me, and so who would call that into question? Not that my life had been built on this version of the story, but that's how I had thought it had happened. So somehow, I think knowing that I was going to share a bit of that story even before I saw that photo, I knew that I had to ask my mom. So I called her this last week, and I asked her. And she confirmed what I had suspected, that sure, we did celebrate Christmas together as a family in that house that year, but we didn't actually move in back in for 3 or 4 months later. And I think I realized something in that experience that I realized before more abstractly, that it's a lot more comfortable to remember things the way that we wish they had happened. And we do this, right? We allow ourselves to remember things in a way that we pray or wish or hope that they had happened. And we even trick ourselves sometimes into thinking that that is how it happened, even if in the back of our minds we know it's not quite true. Well, I think we do this with Christmas as well, because we also tend to think about things from the same perspective over and over. Then that's our perspective. So not just with our memories of this time of year do we do that, but I think also with the story of Christmas in the Bible, we do it with that also. We keep reading the Christmas story from our perspective, whether it's our perspective from when we were a kid or from when we first heard it or whatever it is, and we miss out on certain things that are in that story. It's difficult to be affected, let alone changed, by a story that we've heard time and time again the same way. I mean, we know all the parts. We know how it ends. We have a hard time with the Christmas story because we know the Easter story. And so we hear the Christmas story, and if you were like me when you were a kid, the fact that Easter is so soon after Christmas always really confused me, because I was like, wait, he just was born and now he's dead already? You know, I wasn't thinking about it in larger terms, so that was hard for me. But we know how this story goes, and so we experience it in the same way over and over again. This series has been an attempt, I think, to tell and to hear the Christmas story differently. To realize that we're all a bit grinchy at times. We all know that. And our hearts, our minds need to expand. We need to grow. So Greg and Melissa have looked at Christmas from the perspectives of wonder and justice and hope. And today we're going to try to look at it from the perspective of adventure and risk. But as you know, it's not actually Christmas yet. This is not a Christmas wreath. This is an Advent wreath, right? We're still in a season of Advent. Advent is a season of preparing and of waiting for what's to come. Waiting, that ever popular activity that we're all so good at. I think that, you know, we're good at preparing. We shop and we decorate and we buy, you know, we bake and we do all these things to get ready. And not that we get those things all done on time, but then we have to wait. I mean, we live in a society that has this motto of hurry up and wait. You know, it doesn't quite make sense to us that we could actually wait. But what if we actually did wait? We have what? What's today's the 16th? So we have over a week until Christmas. We still have some waiting left. What if we could agree personally, communally, that we will just linger in this awkward season of waiting? I mean, Christmas is what we want. That's the celebration and the feast. Advent, I don't know if this is, I just think this is clever or if it's true. Advent, we see kind of like the salad that they bring you at a steakhouse. You know it's healthy for you. It's kind of enjoyable, but you really want, you know, the entree. That's what we're waiting for, right? That's the party. And Advent, I think, in a lot of ways is like that. We love Christmas for so many reasons. But how much deeper might we appreciate it, experience it, if we journey through Advent first? If we, like a woman who is pregnant and nearing her due date, if we're really excited for it and just want it to get over with, but we also just enjoy the journey towards getting there, the peace in that. The Christmas story has become about a lot of things. Primarily, obviously, it's the celebration of a birth. We know this, right? And through that birth, God entered the world to be with us. The theological term we use for that is incarnation. It comes from the beginning of John's gospel that said the Word became flesh and dwelled among them, dwelled among us. Now those words, they're pretty, they're beautiful, but how does this incarnation thing, how does it change us? How does Christmas, not just a holiday, but the reality of God entering our world, how does that grow our hearts? That's what this series is about, right? Growing our hearts, just like the Grinch or Ebenezer Scrooge or all these other Christmas stories that we know so well. So, to begin responding to these questions, I'm going to introduce you to someone named Parker Palmer. Greg sent me a video. It must be because he recognized that Parker Palmer is much more intelligent than me and have more eloquent things to say. So we're going to hear a little bit from him. He'll be the second voice in all of this, but he'll be the first to respond to some of these questions about how this actually matters.
And the Christmas story, in its essence, is such a simple and human story about a baby being born under very difficult circumstances. It's a story about God taking the risk of showing up in the flesh and all that comes with it. And I think that's a risk that we're all called to, the risk of incarnation, the risk of embodying our values and our beliefs, the risk of manifesting our identity and integrity in the world, the risk of being fully human. And it's a risk that we shy away from. So the Christmas story, for me, is a constant reminder that the calling is really to be born and born and reborn again and again and again. In the shape of my own true self, and in all of the simplicity and lack of pomp and circumstance that is involved in the original Christmas story.
He's smart, right? I think if you probably could have afforded him, he would be here instead of me this morning talking about this. Just to clarify, he said born and born and born again. He didn't say born again. Some of you are from past or you've experienced the church in a way where they use this term. I don't think that's what he's saying. He's talking about just kind of the risk of God and incarnation and the risk that it challenges us to. He's actually so smart that I don't want to say anything else, so let's just hear more from him.
The baby is very vulnerable. A baby needs nurturing and tending. That's also true of whatever part of me it is that wants to now come out of hiding, that wants to be embodied and incarnate in the world. And I need that unconditional love to provide that nurturing and tending. So it's a story that resonates with me in many, many ways. And I have so many childhood memories of sitting in church and not really understanding that story intellectually, but intuiting it, and really being brought to tears by it. I couldn't have told you what the tears were about, by the story, by the music, by the feeling of the season. I couldn't have told you what the tears were about. But today, I can say at least a little bit more about that, which is what I just tried to say.
So just to kind of re-clarify some of that and move forward with it. God takes this huge risk in entering our world. Jesus, from the beginning, was God, fully human, and yes, also fully God, but still fully human. And which means that God entered this world just like all of us did, as a baby. Now, this is significant, and it has a lot of implications for us, I think, for what that means we are challenged, invited to do, the risks that we're invited to take, and the adventure that we're invited to live. Christmas is God going all in, taking an irreversible step toward us without any guarantee that things would work out. There was no guarantee that in God coming to earth as a baby that that would work out. That meant that God would be playing by the same rules that we play by that are present here on earth. Now, life, as we all know, is an adventure, and God entered into that adventure with us. This is a very loving and a sacrificial action, I think. Becoming human was a risk for God, but it was the only way for God to move forward, because if God is love, which is what I think you and I believe, then the most personal way for God to express this was to become love by entering our world and embodying the very nature of love as a baby. And you heard Parker Palmer's comments on babies and their vulnerability and just kind of that beauty and simplicity. I think babies are probably the most sacred form of life that we know, next to kittens on the internet. But babies, in terms of human life, they're our most precious form. I mean, you know that whether you are a parent or not. Babies are adored, and in some ways you could say that they are practically almost worship, because they represent the pure hope and possibility of a life just waiting to be lived. We look into the eyes of a child and we see all this potential. And I think it's precisely because of this that we have such a hard time. We have sadness and anger and pain about what happened in that school in Connecticut. Senseless violence makes us angry regardless, but when children are involved, it hits us way too close to home. And it brings out some sort of emotion that is really, really, really hard to explain. But I think it's truly because of our view of children and of babies before that, of just the vulnerability, the protection that we want to offer them, and just the sheer potential and hope that we see when we look at them. But I think that that's also why each year the story of a baby being born in a manger is a gift to all of us, because it reminds us that we too can be born into a life and a world of new possibilities. As Parker Palmer suggested, Christmas invites us to embody the things that are most important to us. I mean, we've all had that reality shock, right? I mean, I don't have kids of my own, but my sisters both have kids, and I sent them an email on Friday afternoon after kind of at work seeing a little bit of what was going on, and just one line said, you know, hug your girls tonight, tell them your uncle loves them. One of my sisters didn't really know what was going on, so she quickly wrote back and said, are you okay? Which was a legitimate question. That's her way of showing that she cares about me, that when I send something out that like that and she doesn't understand what it means, she's making sure that I'm all right. And my other sister said, you know, she's been having a hard time and she just needed to wait till she got home to really even start processing it, because she'd just lose it. Her kids were at daycare and I think she just needed to be with them. Okay, so let's think about Christmas for a minute. I told you that we would do this from a different perspective. Mary and Joseph, they find themselves in the middle of this crazy adventure. Trusting God probably felt very, very risky. So you have Mary first. She's the perspective in all this that we think about probably the most often, whether we were raised Catholic or not. We think about Mary and Christmas because she bears the child. I mean, she is visited by an angel who says, you are pregnant, even though I know that that doesn't make any sense. And it's God's kid. And then she realizes, oh, I have to tell my boyfriend about this. And he is probably going to, what, think that I cheated on him or that something crazy is going on. I'm trying to get out of this relationship, so I made up some ridiculous lie or something. And then you have Joseph, the boyfriend, who hears this from his girlfriend and has to believe that, you know, she's been faithful and that this is an okay thing. And so he, beyond all ration, he decides to get engaged and go on this trip with her while she's about to pop at any moment. I mean, this does not seem like a good idea, right? This is the adventure, though, that the Christmas story has at the center of it, is these two young people who are trusting God and believing that things will be okay. Now, you can probably in your own lives see connections between living an adventure and taking risks. I think the reality is that everybody wants to live an adventure, but very few people are willing to actually take risks. It's kind of like the saying that everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. I mean, you can't have one without the other. Adventures are always full of risks. It's the main ingredient. If you found a recipe for adventure, it would list a whole bunch of risks, tell you to put them all in a bowl, add water, and stir. Yet because of our fear of taking risks, I think a lot of us are standing there stirring a bowl of just water and wondering why nothing cool has happened yet. There's this scene. Oh, actually, I need to tell you this. This is important. Okay, so we see the word Advent. Do you understand that the root word of adventure is Advent? There's this connection between, I think, the story, the reality of incarnation, and the adventures that we're all living as people trying to follow and trust Jesus. There's a scene in John's Gospel when Jesus tells us why he came. He says, I came so that you might have life and that you might live it abundantly, which in other words is his way of saying that I came to earth. Christmas happened. I came here so that you can have a full life, so that you can be yourself. God has uniquely created you. No one can be you except you. You possess gifts and abilities that no one else has. And the amazing thing is, you probably don't even realize it because these things come so natural to you. My friend Dave has a really cool way of explaining this. He says that for a lot of people, or I guess this is true because you have these unique gifts. So for all of us, the naturalness of what we possess, our gifts and talents, it would be like if you asked a fish, you know, like, hey, man, how did you learn how to swim? You're really good at swimming. And the fish said, what's swimming? It's just so natural to them. It's what we do. You are good at being you because it's who you are. It just comes natural to you. So as another Christmas brings back memories from the past, from our childhood, it also draws us into the stable with that whole cast of characters that we know from the old story, to remember perhaps for the first time that just as God took the risk of becoming fully human, we too can take the risk and accept God's love for who we are, for our faith, and for even our doubts. And amidst the risks of this, we might hold on to the promise that what the angel told Mary is true for us as well. Remember, the angel said, do not be afraid. The Lord is with you. Another translation of that says, you have nothing to fear. God has a surprise for you. And I believe that's true. God has surprises for all of us. The heart of adventure, the call of Christmas, is to just be you, to be yourself, just like God was God's self by coming to earth as a baby to be loved. Let's pray. God, thanks for Advent, a time for us to prepare our hearts and our homes for Christmas, a time when we also have no choice but to wait. And in our waiting for your son's birth, help us to remember that what happened in the stable wasn't a gift exchange, but simply a gift given. Give us the faith and the courage to believe that we deserve this gift and to live the adventure of being who you created us to be. We thank you for your son, and it's in his name that we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Andy. Two images that are going to stick with me. A bowl full of risks and add water and stir. And having bowls maybe that were just stirring water. And I like adventures and I think I like risks, but that's a good one. The other one is the idea of Joseph and Mary going on a trip when she's about ready to pop. That was new to me. At least the image. I like that. So we are running a little late here. There's not a Viking game starting at noon, is there? Who cares? No. So stick with us. We want to share this meal, and we have a song or two to sing, and we'll be on our way. But I think there's some important stuff here today. So we need to be on adventures. One of the neat things about God and about this enlarging your heart thing is that everything that God is asking you to do, God is asking you to enlarge your heart, you know, to trust wonder, to try some hope, to be about justice, and to go on an adventure. But all of those things are things that God has done already. I mean, God is the specialist on this. And when it says God is with you, when that Jesus is the Emmanuel, God with us, it means that these are the things that God does. And so as we do them, God is with us on us, showing us the way, leading us to it. So, you know, if anyone ever understood wonder, God who created this world with such amazing variety and depth and intricacy, God obviously just delight and wonder is what God is about. The same thing with justice. God has this fierce, burning desire to let right prevail and to have it be born out of love and compassion. And the same with hope. If for God to say that I'm going to accomplish what I want to accomplish through people like you, I mean, God has got to be pretty hopeful and optimistic. And the adventure, I mean, when God said, the way I'm going to be with you is by becoming a baby born in the worst of all possible circumstances, with the least chance of anything ever working out right, God says, I'm ready to go on an adventure. So one of the traditions I think we've had is before we go on adventures is we have a Last Supper. Huh? And this is bread for the journey. And Jesus took bread and he said, eat this. I'm with you. It's me working with you to sustain you on your journey. You're going to be taking some rests, but don't worry, I've fed you. And Jesus took the wine and he poured it in the cup and said, drink this. This is a reminder. This is me, my blood. I poured it out. I'm wanting you to know that I took the ultimate risk for you. I've risked everything for you. Go risk, because you need to be on that adventure. I invite you to come. There are four tables, one in that corner, then there'll be this one here. I'll push it off over there a little bit. Then there are two tables over there. Come and receive. And the words I'd like you to share with each other are these. Just, God risked everything for you. So if you help someone with bread or the wine or the grape juice is a light color, just remind them, God risked everything for you. And that's what this meal is about. So come and receive, share with one another. There is some gluten-free options at this table here. So please come. Be about God's gifts.